Welcome, everybody, to this week's roundtable discussion, whether you're viewing or listening to this on our audio cast. I want to welcome our guests today. To my left is Keisha Gaudette.
Hello.
We've got Andrea Garriott, our newest staff member, kids ministry assistant, and Pastor Adrian Bonin on the far side there. So thank you for joining us and listening in. We're just going to be reflecting on last Sunday's sermon on contentment. So just kind of breaking the ice here, who was one of your favorite childhood heroes? Someone you wanted to be like? Tell me. Adrian?
Batman. Who wouldn't want to be like Batman? Except he's a little scary and he goes out at night, but I'm Batman.
What about you, Andrea?
It's a little strange, but I like Friendly Giant. And I know some people might not know who he is, but he was just friendly and he knew musical instruments and he had all the animal friends. Mm-hmm. And
look
he had
up,
a treehouse.
Way up. I watched that show.
Yeah, it was good.
Absolutely.
Isn't he on the peas? The friendly giant, the green?
That's the green giant.
That's no, different
giant.
The
green giant.
Yeah.
12-year-old me definitely wanted to be like Celine Dion, singing on a stage with a huge booming voice. Not quite accurate to the voice I have.
Hey, you're close.
But yeah, that was something I aspired to.
Yeah,
for
awesome.
Sure, for sure.
Well, one of the things that happens with our aspirations is if we achieve them, we are likely to boast about it. If we don't achieve them, we often envy those who can. And that was really the topic on Sunday, boasting and envy, leading us, instead of loving people, to hating people. How does that happen? Why do envy and boasting lead us to hate rather than love?
I think it just sets a negative thought pattern in your head. And that then turns into more negative thoughts. And instead of wanting to be a cheerleader for others, you look at what they have and you get mad and upset that you don't have that. And yeah, it's not the greatest.
Yeah, I think it starts people down, or me, down a dark path of just wanting to tear people down, you know, rather than to put people up because they've got something that I think I feel like, oh, if I had that, then I'd be good, instead of trying to, you know, pursue God for that thing that's missing, that only He fills.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, it gets dark.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's just that they have something I don't have. And then it does tear down. Like, I deserve that more than they do. And so it's just very much like, it's a limited mentality, too, that if they have, then I must have not.
Right.
So,
yeah, I think it's funny how envy and boasting, though opposite, they create the same reaction, because as a boaster, you hate others because they haven't been able to achieve things. And you might not identify it as hate, but there's just this disregard. There's this minimizing of them, not just in their abilities or their experience or possessions, but in who they are. Like, they must have done something. They must be a bad person to not have been able to do what I've been able to do because I'm such a great person, right? So even though opposites, similar response. But it comes down to our habit of comparisons. We're always measuring ourselves up against anybody and everybody we meet. And the famous quote from Theodore Roosevelt, comparison is the thief of joy. Have you ever had a situation where comparison stole your joy? Andrea?
Yes. This is like confession time.
Yeah.
Sitting here with two current CrossFitters, past CrossFitter, I was always the last. Every class, every exercise. I got better than myself each time, but if I took a moment and looked around, I was never happy. But if I just went and participated, it was always a really, really good time.
Right.
And it was great, but I had to remind myself of that every single time going in, because with fitness, it's so easy to look around and compare.
Right.
Right? Because it's all out there.
Yeah. When I'm behind, I'm always like, pfft. I'm probably doing more weight than that guy, or he's cutting reps, he must be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or he's just taller, he's got longer legs, of course he can run faster than I can.
Who are you talking about?
I don't know.
Keisha?
Definitely can think of a few things. One that I'm getting better at not trying to compare myself to is looking at other married couples and where they are in their life and comparing it to where my husband and I are. Like, that's a bit difficult, but yeah, definitely trying to turn that around mm-hmm. with more of a cheerleader. Yeah, I'm going to cheer for them because right. they're obviously going to be struggling through other things too with that bit of life space that they're in. So I want to lift people up
yeah.
and arrest that negative thought pattern.
That's awesome.
But yeah.
Yeah. Very cool. Where do we get this habit of comparing? Like, why is it so natural to just jump to comparisons, right? You meet someone new, you're looking at, you know, I meet someone with a beard. I wonder if my beard's better. You know, whatever it is, silly things to big things. Where's that habit come from?
Pride, I think, is that we, yeah, it's like the root of all kinds of sin. Pride, it's just that we think we are better than we are, or better than we think we deserve more than we have. And so I think it's that, where do I land on this? And we always want to be higher than other people. Right. And I think it's this false sense.
I think we have a culture of measuring right from the start, mm-hmm. you know, from someone having a baby, how much does he weigh to, you know, you go to school and, you know, what are your grades and how many days did you attend and what are your grades going into university? And, you know, as women, we meet people. Are you a mom? How many kids do you have? Mm. It's just, there's mm-hmm. always a measurement going on. So I think that plays into it for me.
Right. Do you think there's a sense of just like needing to be in control? Because it's like, if I don't know where I land, I feel out of control in my life. I feel like I'm not the one in charge here. And so I need to know where I'm in the pecking order to know how to move up or to avoid moving down. And we just feel like if we don't know, then where am I? Who am I? Right? What do you think, Keisha?
I think our culture is very ambition driven. And if you don't have a set goal that you're striving towards, what are you really? Mm-hmm. And that plays a lot into comparison, because if I don't have a certain goal set for my life and my career, and this other person does, and other people look around at that and they go, well, obviously this other person is better than this person, because if you don't have something that you're working towards, then can you call your life fulfillment,
right.
like fulfilled? Can you have that sense of accomplishment
right.
without that? And yeah, it's a difficult thing to strive past mm-hmm, mm-hmm. that comparison.
Mm-hmm. Now, one of the best known scripture verses in the New Testament, most quoted, we read it on Sunday from Philippians 4, I can do all this through him who strengthens me, right? We hear it quoted all the time. How do people normally use that verse when you hear it quoted? Or, you know, I've done this too, but how do you normally hear that verse quoted?
Everything but contentment, which is what he's talking towards.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can do this one next rep because I've got Christ's strength.
Right. I'm not content, but Christ is going to strengthen me to get what I want so I can be content, right?
Yeah.
That's good. Other thoughts?
No, that's it exactly. Yeah. It's everything previous to that verse, somehow we turned a blind eye to,
yeah.
and then use that verse to say, I've got a goal, God, you're gonna give me this
yeah.
if I lean on you
yeah.
and acknowledge him, and, you know, turning him into kind of a Santa
yeah.
in a way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Totally. Santa or butler, he's your servant. You set the goal, God does his job to give you the strength to accomplish it. Absolutely. And I think, you know, you even have this sense even right now where people are like, oh yeah, sure, there's a pandemic out there, but Christ strengthens me and I can get through it with that, you know. It's like, well, we can also take appropriate precautions and do the right thing, and then we'll be okay as Christ strengthens us to be content through it. And that's the true context of it, right? Paul's talking about the fact that he raises funds for his missionary endeavors, and the Philippians helped out. But he's like, listen, even if he didn't help out, I would have been fine, because I've learned how to be content even when I'm broke and hungry, right? And we often think that contentment or God's will is dependent on our circumstances, but Paul's saying, no. There's something way deeper and way more secure than that that makes me content. So the Stoics, contemporary philosophers of Paul, talked about contentment as self-sufficiency, but Paul saw it as Christ-sufficiency. What's the difference there, Adrian?
Well, I think, not to get too much into the next week's topic on humility.
Yeah.
But I think the idea of contentment is it's from outside of us. If it's If it comes from within us, if we're honest with ourselves, we know we're not enough.
Right.
Like if we're actually truthful, we know that we're broken. We know that we're sinful. We know these issues we have. But Christ is enough. So I think that's where the contentment comes from. It's recognizing I may not be enough. I may not be strong enough. But Christ is.
Right.
Christ is strong enough. So Christ can be enough for me.
Yeah.
I think it's easy to say and so hard to do.
Yeah.
Because I think it takes that every day.
Right.
Rather than comparing ourselves to others, if we compare ourselves to Christ, we go, oh, I'm not anything by comparison.
Right.
And yet he loves me.
Right.
And so that's enough.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think, too, it's surrender. When I read that question, I'm just like, the difference between self-sufficiency and Christ's sufficiency is taking yourself out of the equation and giving God that situation that you're stuck in and being like, you know what, you can have it all and do what you want with it. And that brings a level of contentment because you're just like, oh, it's not on my own self to work through this. It's in God's hands,
yeah.
And then he will mold me with that. And that does bring contentment.
Amen.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I think, you know, when you think of, like, family situations, it's like the reality is your spouse is not enough, but Christ is, right? So Christ fills any gap in that family, your family dynamics, whether it's, you know, issues with kids or not having kids or career or not having a career or whatever it is, none of it's enough. Your wealth is not enough. Your boat is not enough. Your Disney vacation is not enough, but Christ is, right? And so I love that, taking yourself out of the equation and recognizing his sufficiency for you. Now, at the same time, this message is not to breed like, okay, well then everything's fine as it is. I'm not going to try to change my situation. I'm just going to kind of like take what comes. Where's the space for effort, achievement, trying to make a bad situation better? Are you practicing discontentment if you're trying to make a bad situation better? Help with this balance. What do you think?
I know that when you're in a tough spot, you're in a tough spot.
Mm-hmm.
And what helps is to try, like I read a quote, and I'm going to mess this up entirely. It's like when you're stuck in a situation and things are not great, you can still try and seek out good through that situation because God's always going to throw things in there. And if you actively look for those things and trust that God's going to reach down his hand and be like, look at this treasure. I'm going to give you a peek into the mysterious unknown. And if you look for that, that's where you can find joy in the midst of everything.
That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. It's just, it's an act of looking. It's not saying, okay, I have to be content with this.
Mm-hmm.
You can actively search out the joy because when you actively search out the joy, you are looking for God's heart in the midst of everything. And it gives you so much more peace. It's a radiating of peace. Yeah. And it's an acknowledgement that your soul knows that there's something wrong with where you're at.
Right.
And it acknowledges that there's a brokenness in the situation that you're in. And when you look for healing in that, that's where your soul will find peace. Yeah.
That's good.
So there's a good thing to be discontent with your circumstances, but to take hold of that discontent and be like, I'm going to look for God to solve this discontentment. Yeah.
Awesome. Wow. Really good. Anybody else have something to add to that?
It's hard to follow.
Yeah.
but it reminded me of a sermon I heard ages ago, and I'd forgotten about it till just now, and the preacher was saying something about God won't drive a parked car, but it basically said if you don't know the direction that you should be going, or if you're not happy or whatever level of discontent, you still get in the car and start driving it, even if you don't know what direction. Just get moving and get up, and even if you're headed in the wrong direction, he'll put you in a direction, but there needs to be an engagement, I guess, is what she was saying, that, you know, laying down on our backs and saying we're discontent, it's putting everything like on everyone else, or
right.
saying, God, come fix me, and not engaging in a relationship
right.
with him. But the analogy of the car, it made sense to yeah. me, because it really simplified things.
Yeah. Guess it's kind of like avoiding the victim mentality.
Yes.
Where mm-hmm. it's like, okay, yes, circumstances are not ideal. This is not what I wanted out of this situation or out of life in general, but I'm going to keep doing it. And I always like to say, just keep doing what you know God wants you to do. And I think that's driving the car. It's like, okay, well, I'm going to love my neighbor because I know that's what I'm supposed to do. And, you know, because only God can fix this situation, I'm going to do what I know I can do until that happens. Yeah. Adrian, anything to add?
Yeah, I just think of Paul, who wrote that.
Yeah.
You don't look at Paul's life, the little snippets that we have in the book of Acts and his letters, that he was a complacent person.
Right.
Paul was always active. He was always doing things. And so, yeah, I think sometimes we can use that as an excuse, a Christianese excuse for laziness.
Right.
Which I don't think is what God calls us to. Like, act, do things, but recognize we can't control our whole circumstance. Mm-hmm. We can't change everything. But, yeah, like we were saying, do what you can do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. I think we'll leave it there. Thank you guys so much for joining me today. Awesome contributions. And thank you for watching or listening. And we'll be back next.
Thanks, y'all.
We hope you guys enjoyed today's roundtable discussion. Make sure to leave us a comment or a review or a rating. Let us know. And we'd love to keep in touch with you through the week at betheltab.ca.